Hi, everyone. Welcome to Spirit Coaching Radio. I'm Maureen Smith, your show host, as well as a qualified mediator, master intuitive, life and business coach. Spirit Coaching is also hosted online at spiritcoaching.ca and globalmediation.ca. In the event you'd like to book a coaching session with me or require mediation or facilitation for a legal dispute. On today's program, we're going to talk about verbal abuse and its devastating impact on the breakdown of relationships and marriages. I am very excited to help with us today as our guest, Patricia Evans. She is an interpersonal communication specialist and best-selling author of 5 books, including The Verbally Abusive Relationship, her groundbreaking book, Verbal Abuse Survivors Speak Out, Controlling People, and The Verbally Abusive Man, Can He Change? And, most recently, Victory Over Verbal Abuse. She has appeared on over 200 radio stations and national TV programs, including Oprah, CNN, National Radio, and in Newsweek. Patricia lives in the San Francisco Bay Area of California and can be reached via her website at verbalabuse.com. Hi, Patricia. How are you? Welcome to Spirit Coaching Radio.
Hi, Maureen. It's really great to be able to have an opportunity to share some of this information with all your listeners and future listeners and so on. In the old days, people used to say or think that verbal abuse was cussing and swearing. But What we've come to see is that verbal abuse is something much more pervasive than that. Verbal abuse defines another human being's inner reality, from senseless accusations and wounding words to confusing comments and cruel implications. Verbal abuse erodes the minds of millions of people.
I know. I can't believe there's so many different types of abuse. Can you tell me how many
there's physical abuse, spiritual abuse, you know, like religious abuse. There's sexual abuse, and there's financial abuse, and there's verbal abuse. Mm-hmm. And verbal abuse defines the person. It says, tells you what you are. Too sensitive, crazy, stupid, and so forth. What you think you know it all, as an example. What you want to win. What you need therapy. What you should do, and so on. Now, nobody lives within you and knows what you are, what you think, feel, want, are doing, should do, need, and so forth. Only you know those things. So when someone tells you you're trying to start a fight, they don't know your motives, they don't live in your soul, and they psychically, so to speak, rape you, or psychologically speaking, they enter your soul, so to speak. They grovel around, they step out, and they say, oh, I know what you're trying to do. So people hear this kind of thing, if they hear it over and over and over in a relationship, they will be undermined to the point that they doubt themselves.
I get it. They think
maybe there's something wrong with me. Yeah, yeah, like something's wrong with me. So there's verbal abuse can be covert or overt, like a viral invasion. Covert verbal abuse insidiously infiltrates people's lives. And like a heat-seeking missile, overt verbal abuse unerringly blasts its target. So it's overt verbal abuse is much more like yelling and name-calling and that kind of thing, whereas if you're covert, it's sort of like, oh, well, you know, it doesn't look like you know what you're doing, you know. It's just sarcasm and denial and so forth that can make you feel crazy, like something happens and someone says, that didn't happen, I never said that, right after they said it. So you think they're multiple personality, but they're not. You know, they're just denying the abuse. And it precedes domestic violence. It's the unseen face of domestic violence. And not every verbal abuser becomes physically abusive, but all physical abusers have, in a relationship, been verbally abusive to their partner. They don't just start hitting somebody without saying, you know, you're crazy, or you're a bitch, or you're this, or you're that. So It's a very intrusive and mind-numbing and crazy-making thing. And beyond all that, it's a constant stress. It says you're too sensitive, you're trying to start a fight, you're jumping to conclusions, you're blowing everything out of proportion, as if this person lived within you and knew. And that's what's so important to know. It's like crazy talk. In my latest book, I call it JPS, just plain senseless. So we have OCD and ADD and all these different initials so we could say this is JPS behavior, just plain senseless.
Sure.
Because this person who says this to you doesn't know any of these things. So what they do, they just erode your perceptions. So as we look at this, there's, you know, categories. We could say more discounting or judging or criticizing or giving orders or name-calling and so forth. It's not so important that you know all the categories or ever memorize them or anything else. What's important is that you recognize when it's happening to you. So a good response is, if someone says, oh, you're just trying to start a fight or you want to argue, right when you're explaining yourself because they've already just accused you of something, one of the things to do is to give up explaining yourself. Very hard to do,
right.
Because
mm-hmm.
most partners of abusers still deeply think that their mate is rational. And of course, telling you what you are, what you did, or what you're doing is not rational. Only you know that. You know what you're doing. You know what you want. Nobody else does. They have to ask you nicely with their happy voice. And then you may tell them. But anyway, the problem of verbal abuse is pervasive, and it's been unrecognized, and verbally abusive relationships have been unrecognized, and there's been no literature until 1992, when my first book came out.
I know,
with
I
the
read
title
it.
By the same name, yeah. Yeah, and you read that, right. So then the second book, and the books, there's four books that form like a set, and then there's a book on healing, which is called Victory Over Verbal Abuse. I just want you to know that these books are there. I'm not trying to sell them. You can also get them through libraries. Your economic circumstances may not allow you to purchase books. And so if you don't have them for your library, you can get them at the public library. All you do is go in, and if they don't have it, request that they get it from another library. So living with a verbal abuser is like living in a gas chamber with landmines scattered around. You never know when there's going to be a real jab at you verbally or an explosion. And so it's a toxic atmosphere. And very often the people who are abusing are very unaware that they haven't already just been attacked, because they're attacked by your existence, your separateness, your personhood. You're having a different opinion or a different thought or doing something different than they expected. And so the response to verbal abuse, let's say you came into the house and your mate said, boy, you haven't done anything today, you know, yeah, look at that cup in the sink, you know, you're slob or something. Your response isn't to say, I was working all day and I just came in with some groceries and that cup doesn't make me a slob. They don't explain any of that because it's nonsense.
Right.
It's complete nonsense. Instead, you just look at him or her in the eye and say, aha, that's what you say, and walk away. And that the other person is, and maybe laugh. Oh, that's what you say.
And put it back to them.
It's so crazy. It's making me laugh.
Yes, I completely understand.
Yeah, so it's so crazy. So if we can get over the idea, and many women suffer from this, some men do too, but if women can get over the idea that their spouse is rational, who may tout himself as being extremely rational, but actually says irrational things all the time, and defining what you are and what you think and what you're doing. So if you can get past the idea that they're rational and say, this is just nonsense, then you can at least point it out, oh, that's what you say, and laugh when you point it out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're facing an interrogator, where were you, what were you doing, why were you talking to them, blah, 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 like that, you can't even think. You're trying to answer the first question. By the third question, your mind feels like you're wrapped up in a pretzel, and it's just, you can't think. So as soon as you start to hear a second question before you finish the first, if you can try this, it takes time to change our own behavior when we hear things like this. But if you could say, please write down your questions, and I'll get back to you later or tonight or
tomorrow. Well, that sounds
tomorrow.
Like a good idea.
Yeah, it's a great idea. And a lot of times my clients, because I do consulting, they will laugh when they hear this idea, you know. Just, oh, please write down your questions. I'll get back to you later.
It's so simple, isn't it? Sometimes hard to do,
isn't
but yet
it simple?
It's so simple.
If we know that the other person's irrational, or the other person is firing off irrational questions, or questions that aren't even that person's business,
mm-hmm.
you know, you could actually look at the list and say, where I was and who I talked to is not your business. But thanks for asking.
Correct.
And that's your answer. So then you turn it back. So the thing is that there's, when someone's abusive and controlling and scares you with their anger, and then periodically they may be very, very nice.
Mm-hmm.
They may be very kind and, oh, can I get you some coffee? And, you know, just seem really nice. And you think, wow, this person's really nice now because I was saying I couldn't stand it anymore or something like that. But what's really happened, it is explained in the third book, Controlling People. What's really happened is the abuser has withdrawn a projection. So let me explain that. Okay, when the abuser's growing up, the abuser, or person who indulges in verbal abuse, because I don't want to be calling somebody names, so I'm just going to say abuser for short. So this person loses the warm, receptive, nurturing, emotionally intelligent, intuitive, and some of his sensate self. It would be like the character that we read about who said to his son, it was in some news, he said, quit crying or I'll throw you overboard.
Mm-hmm.
And so he threw him overboard. So he was attacking his emotional function,
mm-hmm.
saying you shouldn't feel that way. He was attacking his intuition that something bad was happening because his father was sort of slapping him around, calling it roughhousing, and he'd started crying, and he'd been screaming at his girlfriend, according to bystanders. So he saw something wrong, and he started to cry, and he was being told and said, you've got nothing to cry about. I'll throw you overboard and punish you for your existence. So his father was taking away his emotional intelligence, his sense of the whole thing, we could call it his intuitive intelligence. And actually, some of his sensate awareness was disappearing because he couldn't stand the cold water when he got thrown overboard.
Mm-hmm.
So he would be blocking some of that sensate awareness, because his father always told him to toughen up.
Right.
And so he would be disabling three of his four functions. We only have four functions. So even though it was a dangerous thing to do, and there was a propeller on the boat, and he wasn't that far from it, and he was rescued, the worst, in a way, the worst part of it was he was disabling his son, very actively disabling his son from three of his four functions.
Uh-huh.
The functions being thinking, feeling, sensate, intuitive.
So only
all
left with one.
This intelligence and this emotional awareness and intuition and everything starts to go into his unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of his sensate awareness too, we could just say his father's goal there was to turn him into at least a psychological paraplegic.
Oh, gosh.
That's what his father was doing to him.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a nightmare for this boy to grow up, go through life with half of him in his unconscious.
Yes.
But wait a minute. If he meets a girl, he sees her through the vision of everything he ever wanted.
Mm-hmm.
A warm, receptive, nurturing, emotional, intuitive being.
Mm-hmm.
And when he gets her, boom, he projects this lost self into her. Now she's an extension of his own psyche.
Mm-hmm.
Now at last he feels whole and complete. But wait a minute. She's not doing what she should be doing.
Uh-huh.
Or she's not saying what she should be saying. Not what his extension would be saying, which is usually, I adore you.
Uh-huh.
And therefore, he feels attacked. Half of him is disappearing before his very eyes. Who's this standing here? He's screaming, his psyche, his unconscious is screaming, where did the rest of me go?
Mm-hmm.
And he feels so assaulted, like he's being killed.
Yeah.
And therefore, yeah. He yells at her, and he grabs her, or he hurts her. And the thing is, and he verbally abuses her.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a little story, just to emphasize how real this is. And I hear thousands of these stories. But a man called me up from I don't know where or even what country he was in. I don't know his name. And he said, oh, are you the author? And all kinds of nice things. And then he said, oh, I read Controlling People.
Uh-huh.
Now I know why I threw my wife to the ground.
Oh, my gosh.
And I said, oh, my gosh, really? Yeah, just uh-huh. what you said. Oh, my gosh, what happened? He said, well, I got home from work early, and I love to cook.
Uh-huh.
So I was cooking up a storm. I had all the burners going. And then my wife came in from work, and she said hi, and I said hi.
Uh-huh.
And then she looked down at the mail, and I went in a rage and threw it to the floor. Now I know why. The rest of me was going to walk over and say, can I help you with the cooking?
Oh.
So she, as he'd invaded her body with his extension, and she showed up in her body mm-hmm. where the rest of him was supposed to be, the part of him that was going to walk over. And it was so semi-conscious, you could say, that all he knows is that half of him was gone. Somebody was standing there looking at the mail, but the part of him that was going to walk over and say, can I help you with the cooking? Was gone.
So I get it.
So he threw her to the floor.
Yeah.
He felt like he was killed. So it was nothing to throw her down.
Let me just ask
nothing.
You. Can I ask you, Patricia? In your book,
yeah.
Controlling People, I really enjoyed actually the last few chapters, and you talk about breaking the spell and issues on clarity. What are some other tips that a person can say to an abuser to actually break the pattern?
Well, the pattern has to be broken by the integration of this whole lost self.
Mm-hmm.
But you can bring enough awareness at times to an abusive person indulging in verbal abuse in a regular way. Now, somebody might say to somebody, oh, you're not wearing that, and say, you're telling me what to wear. That's abusive. But the other person might say, oh, I meant to say, it's a black tie dinner, and so you can't wear that. So
uh-huh.
that wouldn't be appropriate. And so the other person says, okay. So when there's a resolution and when there's apology, then, you know, the relationship is not a verbally abusive relationship.
Of course.
But in a verbally abusive relationship, there's no apologies, and it just goes on like this, and it's a complete undermining of the psyche
mm-hmm.
of the person who's hearing it. So, so what happens is that when a person falls in love with someone, they may project a little bit of themselves into the other, but then they normally become healthy and get to know the other person, and they're not projected. But when a person's been disconnected from half of his functions, you
yes.
could say, and his ability to be receptive and his ability to be nurturing because he's tortured by his father or thrown overboard or yelled at or beaten, then he's likely to have this huge part of himself that is looking for a place to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he marries or connects with a woman, he may project that lost self into her. And then there you are. It's called the switch. It usually happens right after marriage. Right after marriage, he's projected this lost self into his partner. If his unconscious could speak, it would be saying, this body won't leave me now.
Mm-hmm.
It's a safe harbor for the rest of me. And he doesn't know about it because it's coming out of his unconscious. But the half of him that was lost by the way he was raised, that half of him is projected into his partner. And then when that happens, he can never really see or hear her again unless he's woke up. So in my fourth book, The Verbally Abusive Man, by the way, they're all listed on this website.
I really enjoyed that book, by the way. You mentioned the switch.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So once he's projected and like that, he has to be woke up. Now, in that book, I do have a sample of a contract, but I've decided through the last 10 years of working with people that for most people, they shouldn't even know about the contract, except the partner should make the list from the appendix, and I help my clients with this.
Yes.
And then should have, I've heard him say, you are, you think, you want, you're trying to, you should, you need, and so forth. And after each one, she puts in, you know, you are too sensitive, crazy, stupid, whatever, and so on down the list. There's 400 samples of abusive sentences. And then she would say to her spouse, this is the one that's abusing, or he would say to her, if we're to have a relationship, I'm asking that you make every effort not to tell me what I am and think and feel, because actually, you're not me. You don't live within me, and you don't know these things. And it's very scary to hear you telling me what I'm thinking and what I want and what I'm trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so here's some examples. And then you read all the examples to him. And you have to do this with a witness, because if you don't have a witness, he will not hear you. The only way he can really hear you and really actively want to hear what you're saying is because someone else is sitting there. So let's say Joe the attorney stopped by. You'd say, Joe, have a seat. And then you would read the list to him, and you'd say, I have something to read to you, to your spouse, and you would read the list and say, this is, if we're to have a relationship, this is what I'm asking you to do, to make every effort not to do these things. And he may be very afraid because that's an attorney sitting there. And then you thank the attorney and he goes.
Yeah.
And he may be afraid, and if he's afraid, his unconscious, which originally said, this body won't leave me now, we're married, and it projected this lost self into the partner, when, on the other hand, when his unconscious says, whoa, this body might leave me now, it's not a safe harbor for the rest of me, and he may withdraw the projection.
Mm-hmm.
Then he sees her like he saw her when he courted her.
Yes.
He sees her through the vision of everything he ever wanted. And so then he may be very sweet and very kind and very nice. Oh, I'm so sorry, honey, and all that. And then when she comes back to him and she embraces him and she says, it's okay, we'll start fresh, all this wonderful stuff, then his unconscious says, ah, this body's chosen me now. It's an even safer harbor for the rest of me.
Mm-hmm.
And he may project right into her again, and this time more so.
So
he'll
so
be more like...
Yeah, can I just intervene for a sec? So it's not really such a good idea to make them feel so safe, in the, because the safer they get, then sometimes the worse it can become.
Well, it's worse, yeah, every time, like women, battered women, on the average come back 5 times.
Uh-huh.
And because the same dynamic is working, they project into their partner and then they withdraw the projection. And then she goes and then they do the whole thing over again. So the only way to handle this is to say, if you can't keep this agreement to not to define me, and by the way, I will not indulge in any of these abusive behaviors either. And if you can't keep this agreement, I want you to get help, and that's
mm-hmm.
when they usually call me. So a lot of men call me and say, help, help, my wife's going to leave me if I don't change. What do I have to do?
Do they really?
So, hundreds of men have called me, and so there are a lot of things they have to do.
Uh-huh.
So I go over, I explain to them why they don't even know
uh-huh.
why they're yelling, why they're angry all the time, because if they actually heard a tape recording of it, they would realize that their partner just said, oh, I'm thinking I might vote for this other person, or do you think we could get Chinese food instead of Mexican again, or any comment that doesn't match his mind, and he may flip out. So, because they do, they flip out because you don't match them. And some are more overt and some are more covert. But whatever they do, it hurts, because when you are assaulted by verbal abuse, it's like saying you're a person who wants to start a fight, or you're a person who likes to argue, or you're a person who's trying to ruin the relationship. Just the opposite of what you're trying to do.
Oh,
so when you hear that, you know, it's awful.
And it doesn't really accomplish anything in the relationship. It just makes things go downhill.
Oh, well, absolutely. But what the goal of the abuser is, he has several goals, but one is to silence his partner. And so he may say, I really love her. I did talk to a guy, a couple, and he said, oh, I love her so much. We've been through so much. She's so wonderful, blah, blah, blah. And she said, but honey, why do you tell me I'm too sensitive? And he didn't say anything. And I looked at him and I said, how come you tell her she's too sensitive? And he says, oh, well, to shut her up. And then he goes right on talking. And see, because his goal was to keep real woman quiet, so he could stay in his illusion with his projection. You know, the dream woman, I call it. But it's not in his dreams. Remember, it's not in his dreams. He doesn't know about it. So that pretty well sums up the problems, and the understanding can be very, you can learn so much from studying this subject and knowing about it. And an abuser can always look into what he can do. He can't just go call an or a marriage and family therapist and go in and talk every day, or talk to his minister, priest, or rabbi every day and think, or every other day or whatever, and think that he's going to get better. He could do that forever. He could do that forever. He really has to have a deep understanding, and he has to do about six things all at the same time, including separate and meet occasionally, maybe once a week with his partner if she's willing, if she's not too traumatized. Because I want to, I think we're pretty through with our time, but I have enough time to mention some of the effects of verbal abuse. You know, it's... The partner usually feels like there's something very much wrong with her, and she'll try millions of things to get better, and the stress can create any illness, and the general most common ones over long-term abuse are chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia. So it has many implications, and people can get other diseases too because their immune system is compromised by the constant stress. And yet they often, you know, are there in the relationship because they have young children, and or because they think there's something wrong with them. And it, once they fix themselves, then it'll be over. You know, then it'll, the person will be nice and love them. So they learn all kinds of things and try to, you know, get better. But all the information, the list of books, some videos and some audios and so forth, they're all on verbalabuse.com.
Okay.
All right. So any other questions?
Wanted to mention to you that I personally, I enjoyed your book, The Verbal Abuse of Man, Can He Change? And I was reading over your suggestions for the agreements there that couples can actually draw up. And once they draw these agreements up, do you find that relationships are saved from this? And, you know, they're able to mediate their issues?
Well, generally, if the only way that I have found it works a whole lot better if the other person doesn't even know about the agreement, and you don't draw it up with the other person, you just draw it up. Well, I'm asking you to agree to this. And then if he agrees, or she agrees, whoever this is, if they agree to it, then you say, and if you can't, if you break the agreement and you find it's difficult to keep this agreement, then I want you to get help, and I'll give you a number. Most people give them my office number so that they can get help. But sometimes they won't agree to it, and so you have to make a plan, maybe a long-range plan or a short-term plan or whatever it takes, so you can leave the relationship because it's so toxic.
Correct.
So if they won't agree and they just look at it and they don't agree, then forget it. And the problem with doing it with your spouse, like what examples do you want to put in for you or for me,
mm-hmm.
is they will often become very confused because it's hard for them to tell the difference between themselves and their projection in you.
Yes, they're really
it's all
not
one
sort
person.
Of, they're really not
so they
sort
will
of conscious.
Usually, yeah, they will usually say, well, you verbal abuse too. And if you say, please stop, they'll say, you're trying to control me. And then you say, please don't tell me what I'm doing. And they'll say, now you're giving me orders. And you say, I'm not giving you orders. And they say, all you want to do is argue. And this can go on forever and ever and ever.
Uh-huh.
So it's much better to just say, this is what I want. I don't want to hear these things anymore. Here's a bunch of examples of somebody telling someone what they are, think, and feel mm-hmm. that I've actually heard you say, and so on. And then you have this list, and you read it to them, and then you see if they can't, if they don't want to get help to integrate themselves, they're certainly not going to have be able to recover from an entire childhood of disconnection, you know, being disconnected from their functions. They're not going to recover that all by themselves. They're going to need a lot of intensive work.
I can see and that,
And a lot of reading and a lot of support
uh-huh.
And just, you know, a whole bunch of things. Yeah.
But recovery is possible. There's always hope.
Yeah, right? if they are diligent in getting the therapy and reading the books over and over
mm-hmm.
and getting on the MEVAC site and doing all the things that they need to do, then they could get themselves integrated and get better.
Right.
And it just takes a lot of good work, yeah.
Uh-huh.
It takes the work and the understanding, and of course they can get better.
Mm-hmm. But I did want to ask you one other question, and that was about mm-hmm. your clarity workshops that you're doing.
Oh, yeah, Clarity Weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah, every year in the spring I give a weekend workshop, and all the details are at verbalabuse.com.
Okay.
And the weekend is a chance for women from anywhere that want to come. They've come from as far as Australia and certainly from Canada.
Uh-huh.
And to come, we have accommodations, and usually about 60 people, 60
mm-hmm.
women are there. It's women only. And they learn more about the issues. They meet each other. They have discussion groups. They have fabulous food and accommodations, and the entire weekend with all their meals. They're like starting with a dinner on Friday,
uh-huh.
and we also have a dance performance and some interesting things on Saturday evening, just, you know, to lighten the mood and everything. And I do a lot of talking and educating, and then they have breakfast, lunch, and dinner on Saturday, and breakfast and lunch on Sunday, and the accommodations and the whole workshop together are only $4.95.
Oh,
so
that sounds
it's
very
real,
reasonable.
Real reasonable. So I try to make it possible for any woman to save up or plan or make arrangements to come.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a really beautiful thing. It's in May. I'm going to try to pull up the exact date because it's always could be slightly off from one year to the next.
So have you got space available for 2013?
Yes, there is. Yes,
mm-hmm.
I have it on my site, too. If you go there, you can read about it. And it's right around the 20th, whatever that Friday is. I have to look it up on my other calendar because every year, like I say, it's right around there. They'll see it on the site.
Okay.
And it's in May 2013. And I think I will, it'll be, you know, 20 years of doing this. I think I will have this be my last one.
Uh-huh.
And then I will be trying, getting on some of the lists to do more speaking in various places, because that's something too that brings in another audience. And so there's so much to learn.
Yeah, I think it's very much needed. And I think, you know, a good solid program is needed in the elementary schools as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. We have to have a really good program. I'm working on some of that now.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, because we have to have children understand there's so many, you know, I've heard from maybe 40,000 women, and they are always saying, I wish I'd have known this when I was a teenager, or
uh-huh.
I wish I'd have known this when I was in high school or college, you know. They... because if they don't know, they can pick the wrong person because, you know, people can seem really nice and they may not recognize subtle signs.
Oh, they certainly can at the beginning. They can be very nice. And then, as you mentioned in the book, you know, there's the switch and the honeymoon period is over. And all of a sudden, all these different behaviors come out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then they don't know what to do. So you have to be very cautious and very alert and extremely aware and very knowledgeable.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, okay, so it's been such a joy to have this time to talk with you. And
for sure, no, it's been a real joy, and thank you very much. Well, have a great weekend. Bye now.